Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and we're here to continue our set of draft countdowns. Got a great one for you tonight. We're recording this on 4/10. We're going to talk about the cornerback group, one I think could have a lot of interest to the Ravens. Join me to do that is Coach DC. You know him from All 22 Films. How you doing, Coach?
Hey, man. Doing great. Thanks. First of all, thanks for having me on once again. Same time, same channel as last year. Pretty much a lot of fun. The one that we did last year, everyone, first of all, but this one was in particular great, and it worked out great that we were able to talk about corners again. So, you know, thanks for the invite, and I'm looking forward to it.
Always a pleasure, Coach, to talk football with you of any type. But the cornerback discussion was one of the really good ones from last year, I thought. I was kind of proud. I had Nate Wiggins at the top of my chart, and the Ravens ended up getting it. I was very excited anyway. They got Wiggins. He wasn't the first corner drafted, but that was excited. But TJ Tampa, we haven't seen on the field yet. He was my number six guy. And the problem with him being, you know, the raw straight line speed that kept him from being drafted, I think, is something that is true of a couple cornerbacks in this draft.
Yeah. Yeah. Thomas from Florida State. 4.58, I think, or 4.56, something
Alexander
like that.
Alexander is a 4.56.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got a lot of guys in there. I guess we'll talk about...
And it's unusual because, you know, who knows when those guys were timed. Some of it's pro day times and some of it's combine related. But look at the five or six corners, actually more than that, like eight corners who had great times, exceptional 40 times. And so when you're talking about a differential from... you know, Darian Porter 4.30 to Thomas 4.58. That's a pretty large difference. If you want to tell me that the difference between a 4.39 and a 4.45 isn't that much mathematically, okay, that makes sense. I'd still say there's some, you know, you can see a 4.3 on the field, but that's a large gap.
And cornerback is a position where speed kills, because if you can get by at safety on more instincts and less speed, but I don't think you can get by with it without it at corner. There's just the further you go down the speed chart, the more you're disadvantaged in this. Let's start by talking a little bit about the Ravens situation here, which we've done for every position group. If you've been listening to this series, very strong comeback season from Marlon Humphrey this last year. The rookie play of Nate Wiggins, very positive surprise, puts the Ravens in a better place than many other NFL teams at cornerback. Of course, just in the last week or so, they signed Chidobe Awuzie, adding a veteran cornerback who had a very good year last year with Tennessee and was cut. Very good year.
Yeah. I like Awuzie or Awuzie, however you say his last name, but I liked him a lot with the Bengals. And it's not fun probably for Ravens fans to hear me say this, but I really – It really disappointed me and bothered me when he got hurt in 2000. I think it was 2022, because he was a big part of what they got done. Yes, Jesse Bates leaving and other factors, you know, led to their defense decreasing in efficiency and effectiveness. But Awuzie was—he's a fantastic cover corner. Prior to that ACL injury, very smart. Just a lot to like. And when the Ravens signed him, I'm not going to lie, there's a part of me that's extremely excited to see how he performs. Is he the same guy that was there in, you know, 2021 and pre-injury 2022? It looks like he may not be, just based on what I'm watching as far as, you know, what gear he can get to and how quickly he can get there. But if he can give us 85% of that guy, I like our chances. We're not going to get back shoulder fades thrown on us four or five times a game and on third down. Right. And just with very minimal punishment for the offense in doing so, he's a high level corner. I'm glad that we got him. It puts Tampa in a difficult situation, but I'm with you. I think we should still be in the market for corner for a lot of reasons, because it's a good group. It's a good group in this draft.
All right. So I'd like Awuzie to be just 95% of who he was last year, and the Ravens will be fine with that. I mean, he was a hell of a player this last year. Arthur Mollett was cut, slot cornerback, and otherwise not addressed. So as of now, my assumption would be that Humphrey would be the bulk of slot corner down. So that's all going to change on draft night. Potentially, if they draft a free safety, we could be back to playing a lot of big nickel with Humphrey there, maybe on obvious passing downs. There's another interesting thing happening in terms of how they get Awuzie on the field. Is he the full-time right cornerback? I think he will start, but I don't know whether he'll start or left or right side. Wiggins played exclusively left cornerback this last year, but I think if you want to have a guy full-time starting, and I can't imagine that they would not want Wiggins on the field for every snap this year after how well he played last year, then I think Wiggins almost has to move to right corner.
Because who knows? I mean, I think I really enjoy, even though McDonald left us, obviously, but I think the Ravens still retained one of the elements to his defense that he's actually recreated in Seattle, and that is almost this kind of like mix and match of which corners are on the field. And I think partially it depends on the hash, clearly a personnel group as well. If you were to look at our team right now pre-draft, if we didn't draft a corner, clearly against 11 personnel, we're going to have Marlon Humphrey at the nickel, like you said, or slot corner, and then Awuzie and Wiggins on the field at some combination of outside corners. But I think I'm aware of and can understand and maybe explain that we have a system that's been in use at least the last 2 years, maybe three, where different corners are on the field in different situations. And I think it provides different patterns or options or calls that flow from those groups. And essentially, I think slows down the offensive coordinator from maybe making his call on a second and six. Hey, which group of corners is in there? And that changes the paradigm in terms of the coverage patterns the Ravens are showing. So the more options we have, the better. Marlon makes it all work, along with Kyle Hamilton, if we do get in a situation where we can slide him down to that nickel.
Once again, 12 and or dime, if they play it, they can get him in there. I will say the Ravens are very fixed in their alignment in three very specific ways. Number one is that they always keep their cornerbacks playing the same shoulder. So they the right cornerback is the right cornerback, the left cornerback is the left cornerback. They don't travel, which is another big one. They do not follow individual receivers, really have not in many years. And even when they've done it at all, it hasn't been much. Try to think what the third is, because I just had three in mind before I did. I'll come back. It'll come back to me in a moment. The other one is they don't generally substitute on anything but a bi-series basis. Now, this came up at inside linebacker as well, is that they'll rotate for an entire drive, but they won't rotate mid-drive. And so any other combinations go in are functions of moving from base to nickel to dime. That happens. But so you'll see Trey White come on the field. And, you know, last year, Brandon Stevens moving to dime as a reaction to that. But they don't actually change cornerbacks within the series. But they did do some where they just, for an entire series, they put a different cornerback in. They certainly did that inside linebacker as well when they were deciding that Simpson wasn't their guy last year. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a very interesting parking lot puzzle to solve for this team. And I have the feeling right now that Wiggins might be moving to right corner because it makes it easier to keep him on the field for more. Looking ahead at the draft though, I think the Ravens need to get younger at the position. Humphrey is an older guy. Obviously Awuzie is only here for 1 year. They have to make decisions about Humphrey at some point, whether it's extend or cut. Last year will be the last year of his contract. So that'll be, you know, knowing what they have at cornerback with from Tampa and whoever they draft this year is going to be a big part of that.
I absolutely agree. The outside linebacker / edge group, the running back group, the D tackle group in this draft and the corner group, I think is one that you want to get a corner. Now, I don't think the outside corner group or position in this draft is like running back, which, you know, really I think pretty much every team in the NFL should draft a running back this year. There's just so much talent there. You need to get as many good players in the building as possible. So maybe it's not as deep as running back or defensive tackle, but the more I watch the corner group, the more positives I see, even with the players who do have known weaknesses, be it athletic or be it, you know, man versus zone, etc. I absolutely think they should be drafting one, and I think it should probably occur in the first, you know, three rounds somewhere. That's where it looks like the talent hits its apex or is nearing, you know, approaching the apex or just coming down from that. Now, look, a couple of NFL teams, actually one NFL team last year drafted two starting corners in the fifth round, the Chargers, Taheem Steele and Cam Hart, who we liked a lot. I think when we talked about him last year on the show. I don't think that that's going to be the case. I don't know that the corner group this year extends that far in terms of that quality down into the, I think those guys were like 161, 179, maybe somewhere, maybe high. Not 179. Yeah. I don't think it gets as far down, into where that fifth round. drafting guys of that quality.
Something we're no doubt going to run into a little bit in the show. Each of us has looked at a lot of corners, but each of us has not looked at every corner. That already came up in some of our production meeting discussion. We're not going to worry too much about that. There may be somebody who's on my list of honorable mentions, more likely. I've got a number 10 guy that maybe you haven't seen film on. Maybe you have somebody in your top 10. The same situation will occur. I'll do the best that I can. The other thing I want to mention is that I have metrics for every player. So I collected all of the players. 223 cornerbacks had at least 300 coverage snaps this last year. 223. So number 112 is the median in that group of top guys. And I have the following for each corner in the entire draft: snaps per coverage target, yards per target, yak per reception, missed tackle rate, opposition passer rate, and coverage snaps per penalty. One of the things I'm a big stickler on is I want to see great traits. I want to see nice backpedal, fluid movement, doesn't give up his hips too early, mirrors well at the top of the stem. I want to see, you know, finds the football in the air. I want to be able to observe that on tape. But every bit as much, I want to be able to see that the metrics corroborate success in doing so.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You want those things to line up.
Yeah, last year, Wiggins was a guy who really had both, and it ended up being a big deal. And I think that both of the Philadelphia corners they got, DeJean and Quinyon Mitchell, were in the same group.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when the film lines up with, you know, the stats, the data, whatever you want to call it, that's the perfect convergence. And that's the guys that the Ravens want. Of course, other NFL front offices are, you know, seeing the same thing. I think we're in a great spot. I think we're in a great spot to draft really good players in this here. And you know, everybody's worried or concerned. Are we going to trade back? Are we going to trade back too far? You know, all of those things. I think that the options, my view on this draft is that it's deeper than many are describing it. Mm-hmm. They want to criticize the quarterback / wide receiver group. I get it. We don't have concerns as the Ravens in those areas at quarterback and wide receiver. I do think there's probably a group of 3 to 5 wide receivers that we would potentially look at in certain spots in the draft. But my immediate thought is that the players we would want to select in those locations probably won't be available when we get to that spot where we would feel comfortable drafting wide receivers. So for the evaluation of the draft, from a Ravens standpoint, I think is different than some of the other teams in the league who may need a quarterback, who may need a wide receiver, or who may need an interior offensive lineman. So in any case, that's my spiel about the draft. I have every day watched more players and just said to myself, this guy looks like someone I could see fitting in the right situation and having an impact early and often. And the Ravens are in a great spot to get as many of those guys in the building as possible.
It's happy birthday to us if there's some positions of non-need for the Ravens.
Exactly.
They have a very balanced set, I think, of needs in terms of, yeah, sure, they need a guard, but they have guards. They need a tackle, but they have some tackles for this year. They're going to have trouble drafting either a running back or a tight end and fitting him into the room. But on the other hand, if the running back group is so good or is there's a top heaviness to it, then that's good in terms of other people drafting from that group. And why don't we keep it at cornerback here? Start us off with your number 10 guy and we'll start the discussion.
So my last guy is one that most people probably don't have at 10. And for me, the piece of content I put out last night on YouTube, the 10 was to be interpreted as, a launch point, because I tried to encourage other people to watch the film and in fact provided links for people to do so on a Google share drive. But it's Quincy Riley from Louisville. I thought he was a little slower than others for his 40 time. Then let me put it this way. He seems to play faster on film than a 4.48. I think he's definitely one of those guys that kind of sees things before they happen, meaning he's probably prepared for the formation, the situation. I thought he showed nice coverage ability at outside corner and nickel, and seemed to also have a knack to challenge catches with great timing, but also avoid penalties at the same time. And that I would say is a skill in and of itself.
Good stuff. Do you want me to respond to that, or did you have more stuff? I have a lot on Riley.
We'll play ping pong. Go ahead, and then I'll come back.
Okay. Give you a chance at the end here. I'll go quickly through my notes. So first of all, let me give you his 2024 coverage metrics, but I decided to do something somebody asked me to do on another show. It's a good idea. try and lead off with a who this guy is description, I'd say Quincy Riley is a ball hawk slot corner. I would project him to at the NFL level with a huge tackling problem. I'll go through the coverage metrics really quickly. Snaps per coverage target was 5.2. He gets targeted a lot, that means. Yards per target of 6.9 is a little bit below average. It's about 6.2 among the drafted guys is the median. Yak per reception of 5.7 last year, but 4.0 career. So he had some missed tackles that cost him more yards after the catch this last year. Missed tackle rate last year, 25.6%. It might be the very highest of the draftable tackles. Of draftable cornerbacks. It's 18.8% career. That's not quite the highest, but it's very bad. 13.9% is average at corner or median. Opposition passer rating was only 73. And here's what's nice. The 73 opposition passer rating was his worst in six college seasons. He's got a 50.1 opposition passer rating. Think about how many football games you win when you hold the opposing quarterback to a 50.1 passer rating and you realize how much value a guy like this can have. And coverage snaps per penalty, you mentioned it was good, about one every 168 snaps, which is definitely a positive there. He's got 8 interceptions and 27 passes defense in 3 seasons at Louisville, covering 1,096 coverage snaps. What I looked at was his interceptions in particular this last year. And one thing I tried to do was look for common threads in the interception. He had an in-phase left sideline interception with the wide receiver right on top of him. It's as if he had Brandon Stevens coverage right in his hip pocket, in phase, all the way down the left sideline, except he found the ball in the air and made the interception despite the best efforts of the wide receiver, which is really remarkable. He had an in phase on the right sideline as well, where the receiver happened to overrun the play, made an interception very easy and uncontested for him, but still
he was in the right place. Yeah, two of those.
I may be getting to another. Underneath on zone on the right sideline in space on a pressured underthrow, and then hauled in on the left sideline over the shoulder and 2 to 3 yards ahead as if he was almost a receiver.
He runs the route. What happens on some of those is, and even some where he doesn't get the pick, is he does what we call, he runs the route for him. I will say this on that element and the missed tackle related, they played a lot of 3 deep, 3 under, what I thought they did. So I thought I saw a lot of it. Meaning if a player does catch the ball against a 3 deep, 3 under, just from a mathematical standpoint and a spatial awareness or geometric standpoint, I guess, there's more space on the field for an offensive player with the ball in his hand to actually take advantage of, because there's less defenders in the area to defend. You only have 6 guys in coverage. But having said that, he's really good in those, what I guess many people would call a fire zone or a zone blitz. Typically, I'm old, so when we say 3 deep, 3 under, we're talking about a zone blitz, but other people have different names for it. He's really good in those coverages at understanding, okay, it's a 5-man rush, and I know which route is probably going to be the one that's thrown here. I think he's a professional-level corner, and it stuck out to me, his awareness and his ability to break on the ball. And you watch, you know, so many plays. He's one of those guys, probably 4 or 5 times, I thought, okay, well, if the quarterback had held the ball a little longer, this other player's coming open. But again, I think it's related to the fact that Quincy Riley knows the coverage, knows the blitz, and understands how much time the quarterback is probably not going to have to actually hold on to the ball a little longer. So when I say he's a professional corner, that's what I mean. I like the player. I didn't know much about the missed tackle rate, to be honest with you, at all. But he's one that I knew when I put him on my list for the piece of content I put out last night. I knew that he was probably, I had him higher than, you know, probably most people that do top 10 or top 15 lists.
I think there are a couple more positives to look at. I'll go through these really quickly. Nice fast downhill trigger that goes with most zone cornerbacks, that they're good in that respect. You'll notice that what I talked about, most of his interceptions were kind of on the boundary. So he played some slot and some outside. He's got a weakness in tackling that would put him on the outside. Unfortunately, he's got a size limitation that would put him on the inside, which kind of makes him a tweener in NFL terms. That's a little unfortunate, but he has been a punt returner. 2024, he had 6. He apparently did it in high school as well. So he's a guy I'm sure when we go to camp, we'll be seeing him return punts and one of the options they'll be looking at. I guess for me, he's a little smaller than the typical aircraft carrier outside corner for the Ravens. But if they want the punt return thing as an added, and they've done that with Asa Jackson, you remember him as a corner, a 5th round pick a number of years ago, then he becomes a kind of a prime candidate to select on day 3. I would take him as early as the last pick in round 5 is where I would have him projected for. And there's, you have a big gap for the Ravens between I think it's 136 and the last pick of round five, yeah, whatever that is. But I have him as the number 16 cornerback on my list, sixth among the honorable mentions. I like them too.
That's about where, you know, I would think he'd be taken. I look at certain players and I say, you know, they look like a guy who may get taken with one of those comp picks that so many teams have at the end of the fourth round, essentially meaning it's a fifth round pick, but you know, it's an added fourth round pick at the end of that series. When I watched him, I'll be honest with you, I was a little surprised. I was a little surprised that I liked him so much, especially the coverage standpoint. Like you said, you mentioned it, burst downhill really well, mm-hmm, on things in front of him. Great timing, professional level corner. A little bit more refined in his ability to break downhill and not get beat deep than some of the other guys that are a little bit more risk takers. He doesn't seem to be a risk taker to me. He seems to be a guy who reacts to what he sees, and therefore, you know, isn't going to get beat deep. He's not a burner by any means. At, like I said, I think 4.48.
Yeah, I mean that's okay, but it's not at the top of the class anymore. Certainly at corner. I guess I'll go on with my number 10 guy, who is Noel Williams of Cal. And we always have to be conscious of this when we're doing the show, which is that we need to kind of keep it rolling.
I don't know anything about him. It's on you. It's all you.
Yes, that's obviously all me. So Noel Williams of Cal, a guy who had 7 interceptions that might have led the entire NCAA. He was very close at corner. He led for most of the season. I do know that. Big, instinctive outside cornerback, finds the football in the air as well as anyone, despite the fact he has a substandard athletic profile. So 6'1", 199, that's fine in terms of size. 450, 40. Length is fine. I don't have an age on him. He's probably 23 because he spent 3 years at UNLV and then 2 years at Cal. He tested in everything, which I always like to see. I like to see the guys who do the tests at the combine and test across the board, because you know if they didn't do it, they're lousy, and the curve is basically, you know, hurting a player who tests at everything. Because anyway.
Totally agree. Yeah. We're old, Ken, so we want to see the guys do the drills at the combine. We're old.
But yeah, no, all these guys have injury concerns as well. But anyway, the only thing he tested that was above average was the 19 bench reps. Otherwise, he was subpar jumps, 3-cone shuttle. So if you're a RAS guy, Noel Williams would not be your guy. Coverage metrics, though, were outstanding. We're good. One coverage target of 8.2 snaps. Yards per target with 5.4, which is excellent. Yards per yak per reception of 3.3. That's a good tackler. Missed tackle rate of 5.7%. Now, his prior career rate was 16.8%. So you'll see people write up things about what a crappy tackler is. It's ancient history. He is a great tackler as of this last year. He looked fantastic on tape, by the way.
Sounds like a guy who, you know, knows how to play the game, big, strong. And there is something to be said for the NFL game promotes clean releases for receivers and allowing them to essentially play 7-on-7 or pass Kelly. And there are some dinosaurs as coaches or players that still are out there that believe in collisioning receivers and tight ends, and he sounds like one of those. So, you know, sounds good. I do have 2 games of him. I just haven't had a chance to watch him yet.
I got a couple more things and I'll be done, I promise. Coverage snaps per penalty is 178. Opposition passer rating 40.1 is outstanding. So good on basically all the coverage stats. Penalty rate is improved. It's still 1 every 108 career, which is not particularly good. He has a best in group ball predictions with production with 14 career picks of the group. That's of the group I looked at. He's the very best. There are safeties who are better. There isn't any corner who's any better. I like, one of the things I really like about him is he does not concede space running down the boundary. And there are so many receivers now, and particularly tight ends, if they're on a boundary route covered by a corner, they'll push to the inside to kind of get that
right
corner a little bit disadvantaged in terms of having to move around him and then concede space to the inside. He's physical. He doesn't do it. And he really squeezes to the boundary in a way I love to see. So
sounds like Carlton Davis III. That's one of the things I said about him last year with the Lions was he doesn't cede 1 inch. He doesn't give 1 inch to the receiver, just competes for, you know, at the release of the route, competes during the route, and obviously competes at the catch point. You love those guys, especially to the boundary. I don't know what the numbers are, but I think that, you know, guys are, NFL offenses are taking advantage of the boundary more and more these days.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree, and I think they know how to, you know, buy themselves space out there effectively by rerouting that cornerback. I had some interception detail really quickly for him from 2024, and this just describes them all. Undercut on the left sideline with the QB under pressure. That's going to be a key fact that repeats. Deflection in a loose bracket. So he picked up the deflection. He was a loose bracket on the back end of cover three on the, it's between the numbers in the left hash versus Auburn. He was underneath on a 50-50 ball, 25 yards on the left sideline. Also in that Auburn game, he mirrored the QB in level three. Now you hear about a guy mirroring the quarterback. You normally think he's a spy or something. He's really mirroring the QB in the level three and saw that he was under pressure and rolling left as a right-handed quarterback. And then he found a good spot to be in as the guy threw up the flotation device, didn't get it out of bounds. And he was in a spot where he had the greatest possible range to make that pick. I love that pick. Love watching it. It's his fourth pick of the season. If you want to go back and look at it versus, I'm not sure who it was against. Pick six versus Cam Ward. Cam Ward threw a ball back to the middle of the field, and that was death to him. Williams again on the back end of a nice loose bracket. Interception on the end zone, 30 yards on the left corner. It appeared the Pittsburgh quarterback out threw the receiver badly, but once again, he was positioned to be in the best position for the broadest possible catch radius on that interception. And in fact, Williams ran 15 yards off his own man to get to that spot. Very impressive interception versus Pitt, if you want to take a look. Then he had man coverage of Wake. It's number five. I don't know who that is. 20 yards down the left sideline, adjust to the overthrow to make a pick there. The point that keep coming up for Noel Williams is how much he's watching what sort of trouble the quarterback is in deciding where he wants to be to make interceptions. Extremely advanced for a
great eyes.
Cornerback coming to the NFL.
Got to have great eyes. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Anything else? For the Ravens, he'd jump in. He'd be four-unit special teams player right away. They'd want to see him on the outside some in 25 for 26 decision-making on Humphrey and Awuzie. I think he'd get a long look in the preseason, and he could slip ahead of Tampa on the totem pole. I think highly of Tampa, but I think Noel Williams as a third-round draft pick is going to be already a slightly higher pedigree than Tampa, who's a four. And having one additional year is extremely valuable to know what you have in that player to start with.
I mean, A, for the amount of study that you do, and B, for him to be your 10th-rated guy, speaks to the depth of the draft.
Oh yeah.
In that you just said you think he would, either compete with or exceed Tampa quite quickly. So that just, I think, backs up the point that I was trying to make earlier. And I've tried to stress multiple times that this is a better draft, especially on the defensive side of the ball, than many people have given it credit.
I think it would be a par pick at number 91. I think I'd be really, really, really excited about it if he came in round four. And it is possible because I don't think he's all that highly thought of in terms of where he sits on people's boards.
It's the same way I look at it. You know, that certain guys would be a good pick in one location, but in the next draft or next round, they would be a fantastic pick. So my next guy is Thomas, the corner from Florida State. You know, he contests everything. 6'2", I think almost 200 pounds. The speed. The time 4.58, and I think he actually ran another one and was even slower than that. Clearly a concern, but I got him at 20 years old. I don't know if that's accurate or not. And the fact that he
21
did
21 in July. That's 20.
Yeah, okay. So yeah, most of my ages are reflected at the date, except for one. There's somebody who literally has a birthday like 2 days after the draft. I forget who it is, but in any case, he did play next to Renardo Green last year. And Renardo Green went to San Francisco and obviously had a real great season, 13 PDs, I think two interceptions. Even watching Renardo Green's film last year, I noted how Thomas contests everything, every moment, every blade of grass, essentially. And there is a lot of missed tackles on film that I noted, four. I don't know the missed tackle rate, but you'll get to that in a minute. Additional to that, based on what I saw, there was, even though he contests everything, he's always there. There was a lack of PDs and interceptions from a career standpoint statistically. And that kind of surprised me because he was a two-year starter at Florida State. And I would have, with his ability to, he doesn't play like a 4.58 guy. Like watching his film, I would say my guess would be 4.48, like a Quincy Riley. And, the concern is that he's so slow, but look, Kamari Lassiter just played extremely well as a rookie for the Houston Texans. He ran a 4.63 and a 4.61. Richard Sherman, I think, was a 4.55 guy. There have been people who've come into the league and played well. With that speed on their ledger. What I do like about Thomas a lot is that he plays press man like he wants to be there. And I've seen him get beat in press man and then the very next snap. And that's one of the things I love about getting the whole game and not just highlights is you watch the next snap after a guy gets beat. And I don't know this. All I can say is from watching the film, he seems to have the mentality of I'm going to compete every snap, every moment that I'm on the field. There doesn't seem to be any BS in Thomas at all. He's a guy that I really like a lot. And I didn't like him when I first started watching Florida State film last year for Renardo Green. And that's helped me. I actually enjoy that process of Jack Sawyer is another one from Ohio State. I did not like him at all. And then when I finished watching six games, I was like, wow, I like Jack Sawyer. I guess I have to admit it. And Thomas is one of those guys. I think he plays faster than the 4.58. I don't know, where he fits in this draft. For me, I would say if we picked him in the fourth round, I'd be happy if we, felt comfortable with that. But if we picked him in the third round, for me, that's a little bit close to where I would say, I think that's a little soon for the Ravens, at least.
Okay. All right. I have him as a second round guy. I love him. And I have him at number 8. And I'll go through some of the reasons why here. Get down to Azarier's stuff here. Okay. So first of all, he's one of two guys that are actually fairly similar. We're going to get to Darian Porter, I'm sure, at some point tonight. But Darian Porter is a 6'4", incredible athlete. Azarier Thomas is a 6'2", 198 guy. But they have something in tremendously similar. They both are very long cornerbacks, 32 and 3/8 in his case, even longer in the case of Porter. But no quarterback wants to throw anywhere near them. They cast a shadow over the field in terms of their potential interception or catch radius. And so he only got targeted once every 10.8 coverage snaps. Porter was one of the only guys who was targeted less frequently. Yards per target, 4.3. So a lot of underneath stuff, but not much else. Yak per reception, 3.8. Missed tackle rate was 13.8%. Absolutely right on the median. 13.9% is the median. 13.8% is okay. Opposition passer rating of 50.2 and coverage snaps for penalty of 119. That's a little low. You would rather that be better, a higher number. So it's more infrequent penalties. What else do I want to say about him here? He's one of the few cornerbacks in the entire draft, I think, who can truly handle both press and zone responsibilities. In a lot of ways, I think he's better at zone despite his size, coming downhill and seeing the football. To me, the problem is not that he gets to the ball and knocks it down, because I think he does a lot of that. He contests the ball, I think, very well from behind, for example. And long corners are often this way. I'm more impressed when it's a short corner who does it. But Chris McAllister and Marlon Humphrey, guys who come from behind the receiver, reach in front of them and disrupt the throw very effectively. He's that guy. 14 passes defense and one interception, though, is the wrong conversion rate for a guy like him. He should have more balls that are being converted interceptions. They don't even have to be his. He could be tipping the ball to somebody else to get an interception, but his team needs to be converting more of those into interceptions. The longest play he allowed in 2024 was 21 yards. So one of the things I've been trying to do is go through and find out when people got beat, why did they get beat on their long plays? And he didn't have any. He really didn't have any that he got beat on. I think for the Ravens, he meets their aircraft carrier size needs. He'd be a very solid opposite side to Wiggins, who already has the unmatched speed. So you can, presumably you could have one guy with lesser speed. Now, that works better if you're traveling and, you're matching up the way you want instead of the way the offense wants, and they can get their fast receiver on your slow coverage guy. But still, I like having a mix of speed there. I don't think he's a reach at all in number 59, which is in the second round. It'll be interesting to me to see if Porter and he are both available at that point, and we'll get to where you have Porter on your list, because they're so similar in terms of players, who they would draft between those two. And there's good reasons. I think you can make a case for either, but I really love Thomas anyway.
Yeah, what you said about him, that he excels playing up close to the receiver. Sometimes they show press and they bail, you know. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's off coverage. He's professional level, I think, in his play last year. He also doesn't – there doesn't seem to be a difference in the way he plays against smaller, quicker guys and bigger tight ends when that's occasionally happened and they've put a tight end into the boundary. Like I said, he was a guy that when I first started watching him last year, scouting Renardo Green, I didn't like him initially. And then more I watched him last year, I thought, well, this guy's a pretty good player too. Who is he? And then, of course, at some point last year, I realized, he's not in the 2024 NFL draft. For him to run a slower 40, I think it was Stacey Van Diver or someone in my Discord said, hey, that's a good thing because that moves him down the draft board maybe in a position, where we can take him. You've got him, possibly being taken a little earlier than I do. It'd be great to get him in as a third round pick or fourth round guy mm-hmm. from, having already addressed other positions earlier. I guess what I'm saying is the 40 time, if it moves him down the draft and we're able to grab someone with this coverage ability later on and address other positions first, that's a win-win. That's almost like three wins in one.
Yeah, that was the case with Tampa last year, who fell for exactly that reason. And I think there would be reasonable hope that he could drop. Very possible he's available at 91. I don't know about the fourth round, but it's very possible he could last to 91. All right, so we're up to you. I think, did you do your number nine guy yet? No, I didn't do my number nine guy. Thomas was your number nine guy.
That's correct.
So my number nine guy is Benjamin Morrison of Notre Dame. So this is going to be a player there's going to be some polarizing thoughts about because Morrison is higher on some people's boards than this. I'll tell you, start with who he is. He's a very lean boundary cornerback with outstanding mirroring, ball skills near the top of the class, and a huge medical flag. And that's why he's lower on my board. 439 other 40. And he has, I don't believe he's done it. Yeah, he doesn't participate in the combine or pro day testing, but he set a private workout that's 421. So that's not happening until 11 days after recording this. And by the time you listen, it may be that Morrison has moved tremendously on my board. Certainly by draft night, you could see that happen depending on how that workout goes. 2024 coverage metrics were only in 168 snaps and they weren't as good. One target every 6.2 coverage snaps. Yards per target was 4.6. That's very good. Yak per reception was 7.0. And he had his usual bad tackling year. He's a 17.1% career. Actually, that's 17.1% in 2023 and 16.7% in 2024. Both bad missed tackle rates. OPR was 58.4, 60.8 the year before. He's always been very good in that category. And coverage snaps per penalty are at 168 this last year, which is a significant reduction for him. He had a really bad year in 2023 where he had a penalty every 55 snaps. And you can't do that. There are some guys in the NFL who did it, but there's only two cornerbacks in all of college football who had at least who had double digit penalties this last year. And you really need to avoid that. But here's the big thing. Medical flag is for a hip injury that ended his 2024 season after week 7. I can't find a full explanation of it, but there was surgery involved. Morrison said he was cleared to resume physical activity in January. We haven't heard anything except that this private workout is coming. It's the kind of thing that I think the Ravens would be fairly triggered for after the Dennis Pitta situation.
Yeah, interesting that his workout is so late. Kind of smart. Got to give him credit there. Maybe.
If you're looking for a better way to unwind, focus, or even get a good night's sleep, listen up. Let me tell you about Mood, the online cannabis company that's changing the game when it comes to functional gummies. They've crafted a whole line up of federally legal THC blends designed to help with everything from stress to sleep to mental clarity and even some spicier needs if you're into that. Now, what makes Mood different? They go beyond just THC. They pair it with herbs and adaptogens to create targeted effects that you won't find in any other dispensary. And every gummy is made with pesticide-free, small-farm American cannabis, so you're getting quality that you can trust. I've tried their sleep gummies, and let me tell you, takes about 15 minutes, and I'm out cold, no grogginess, no weird side effects, getting some of the best sleep I've gotten in my life when I take one of these gummies. And if you need a mood boost, there are epic Euphoria gummies, game changers. And right now, Mood is giving listeners 20% off their first order by using the promo code RAVENS at checkout. So head on over to mood.com, find the perfect gummy for whatever life throws your way, and don't forget to use the promo code RAVENS to save 20%.
Come out, bust the workout up, put on a good show, and then you start to move up, like you said. I think I have him like somewhere in the five range. One, two. I have him five. Nine interceptions, I think, in 31 career games. Six. I got him at 6'1", 194, 193. Very, very aware of down and distance. He's a guy that I think somewhat similar to Quincy Riley, but in my opinion, the Quincy Riley explanation was more about the three deep, three under coverage and how often I thought Louisville was playing it. This thought that I have for Morrison is a little different. He's the guy that I saw the film of, and I don't know how I wanted to the correct phrase, so you can take the baton if you want here in a moment and fix it for me. This happened the most with Morrison film that I watched. A quarterback gets the ball, typically in the shotgun, looks to that side, and then decides, I'm not throwing the ball there. And meaning he's at what I would consider the read side, and not just a quarterback looking to one side to then come back to the other side of the field intentionally. And, I don't know how to describe that. There's obviously no stat that I could find or you could find for that. But it was one thing that I noticed for 2024. He didn't play many games, like you said. I think it was like seven. I did think that the first injury was last year a shoulder, and this one this year is a hip. So absolutely, real concerns for that.
I do have one response to that, is that his average number of targets per coverage snap is higher than most of the other cornerbacks. The median was one every 7.1 for all the guys who had 300 plus coverage snaps. That includes a lot of non-draftable players. And he was at, in consecutive years, they threw at him more than that total. Now, that doesn't mean what you're saying isn't true, by the way, because there's still, it means 85% of the targets, it could have been that way. And, but he was targeted a little bit more than the typical college cornerback.
Really extremely aware, like from a down and distance standpoint, it seems like he identifies route concepts really quick. I do think there's something to be said for the Notre Dame defensive factor as well. It's a great system. They prepare guys. He seems like a very professional, smooth corner who can be combative at times. It's so weird. How boxers will like come out and one round they're boxing, quote unquote, using the jab. And then the next round, they seem to be throwing a lot of lead right hands, maybe lead hooks. I made a note that he almost reminds me of that. He seems somebody who can kind of switch gears from snap to snap, depending on the call. We never know, okay, was it the defensive call that warranted a corner being more aggressive, or was it him recognizing, okay, I see a formation, a situation, I think I've probably got this route concept, let me be a little bit more aggressive in jamming this receiver to the inside. Who knows, right, what the factors are? We can't know that. We don't get the call. But there does seem to be a lot of variability in what he can do physically. I thought he showed exceptional ability adjusting during the play. So like when the quarterback moved around in the pocket, had to shift a little bit or escape the pocket, Morrison seemed to be a guy who was able to adjust to the route concept, kind of like you described. I think Williams, you said, from Cal. Kind of like you described him. It sounds like similar skill set or awareness ability. Morrison seemed to be a guy who could do that during the play at a really high level. Unfortunately, like you said, he got injured, and there wasn't much detail to find. I was even trying to get behind like paywall, Notre Dame fan websites to find information or forums, and there just wasn't anything available to give you, real specifics, or at least I couldn't find it.
Okay, so in terms of where he'd be a par or a value pick, where do you think he goes? Where do you think he is on the Ravens board? Do you think?
Good player. I think some other team may draft him in the 27 to 32 to 35 range. Ooh. But for me, for the Ravens at 27, I don't think that's even an option. I mean, it just for me, but I recognize there's going to be other people who say, oh, he'd be a great pick for this team at 28 or this team at 32. That's not, if if he's sitting there in round two and we've already addressed some other position and we want to go that route, but if he's sitting there at round two, then that means the medicals are probably exactly, really poor exactly. and other teams have the same information the Ravens do. So now we have to admit though, you know, N'Kobe Dean, the medicals for him also pushed him really down far down the board, and he played his ass off this past season for the Philadelphia Eagles. So there's situations where it does work out. It's just a matter of whether, you know, the Ravens or any other team would think that the potential warrants taking a risk on someone who's had, you know, what appears to be or what might be a serious injury that could impact them long term.
Yeah, I first of all, I trust the Ravens to ask the right questions of him and maybe his doctors if they're allowed to find out what the real situation is. So whether they're thinking about taking him at 59 or thinking about even taking him at number 91, I think they'll do their homework on it. And I do think the specific injury is one that is going to be so triggering for Ravens fan, given the pit of history, that I don't think the Ravens will touch him. And the Ravens also have the David Ajabo situation hanging over their heads, where they took a top 15 guy, theoretically, at number 45 or whatever it was, and it didn't work out. I think if you really looked at the history of that, and make a great study, by the way, of who had a medical flag, got drafted late because of it, and then how did their careers turn out relative to their second draft position, to their actual draft position, my guess is you'd find out you lose more than you win by taking value bets on medicals. But I could be wrong about that. I make a great study. Yeah,
it makes sense. I mean, that's why there's a medical concern. You know, the converse or the corollary is, you know, how often do you have issues with guys who don't have a medical issue? Well, it's clearly going to be, you know, I think it kind of proves itself. But no, I agree. I don't think he's there at 91. Even if there are serious medical concerns, I think someone is gonna grab him.
Yeah.
For me, I just don't think he's a guy that, you know, for the Ravens is anywhere near an option at 27 at all. You know, good player.
Basically 0% chance he goes in the first round to anyone. And then maybe I'm going to toss out a number for you. Maybe 90% he goes on day two.
And 10%
somewhere else.
I would think he's probably I use ranges, so forgive me if it sounds like a cop out. I would say he's probably a 28 to 40 guy, somewhere in that area, you know, depending on the team's needs and how many corners get taken. But you know, some of these mocks, I'm shocked at how few corners are taken in the first 45 picks. I'm like, what are you guys looking at? Like, how are you saying that there aren't five quality corners that should be taken in the first, you know, 42 picks or whatever? Because, you know, I don't know about you, but I go back and look at previous drafts. I'm like, all right, well, how many corners were taken? You know, last year's 26 corners, 25 corners in the first 176 picks, the fifth, you know, so one out of every, I know you like math, so one out of every seven, you know, or something like that. So you get that from baseball batting averages, right? Or at least I do. So like one out of every seven, you're telling me that what are we going to be at this year? One out of every 12? Get out of here. Like, it's not going to be like that for corners. There's quality there. And you just got to, like you did, you know, with Cal and Noel Williams, like there's quality there, you know, that that maybe people haven't heard of, but doesn't mean that they're not a really good player. In this case, we know Morrison's a good player. Serious medical concerns, you know, probably going to push him down the board. It's a shame, right? Because he's young. I think he's 21. I don't believe he ever redshirted. So hopefully, you know, he's able to keep healthy and at least not end up in the AFC North.
Yeah, just 21 in March. He is one of the very young ones in the entire draft. All right, so your number eight guy, I believe, is next, unless we already hit on your number eight guy. Not sure.
Nope. No, Trey Amos from Ole Miss. Pretty good RAS score. I think he had three picks in 2024. Not a great 40 time, but not bad. 4.43 or 4.44. Mm-hmm. Very quick to close space on three-step routes. So, you know, it could be system related or scheme, whatever Ole Miss is playing, but one of the guys that I thought came downhill, Riley would be another one, and I think you mentioned it when we talked about him. Amos is one of the guys that comes downhill the best from an off-coverage position in recognizing the route concept. And you know, the route concepts that I saw him defending well were ones that are very familiar because there's a lot of stuff the Ravens run. So, like, you know, he played better, I thought, this year for Ole Miss than the year before against Alabama. I know there's three or four plays out there from his 2023 at Alabama that are high profile and negative, but I thought he was versatile this past year. Played press man. He doesn't overwhelm people because he's not a huge corner, but he's 195 pounds, so he's not small. Mm-hmm. It's not like he's a 175 pound guy. And also really good in zone and pattern match. I felt like he was one of the guys who didn't give away the coverage scheme early after the snap or immediately after the snap. Some guys do. Some guys, the quarterback can go look over there and, okay, I know it's this. Boom, let me throw the ball. I felt like there was a number of times where people threw the ball to Amos's side, but it was, 0.15 or 0.125 seconds later than maybe the ball, quote, should have been thrown because they weren't sure what coverage Amos was in. That's not an evaluative thing. That's just an observation. I do like that he's combative. My comparison for him, he's a little bit bigger than this guy. He is Amik Robertson, who's a player that I like a lot, a corner for the Lions. The difference or the problem there is Amos has always been an outside corner. Robertson kind of vacillates between the two. 23 years old, so a little bit older than other guys. Pretty good RAS score. I thought he faced really great talent in the SEC the last 2 years, and I thought he held up to it. I recognize that other people will have him a little lower, but good player for me. Someone who, if we took him at 27, I would like it. I wouldn't love it. I know other people. I've seen two people who are like, I think he's going to be gone before 27. I don't think that. But I think he's a good player, and I think he'd be in the range of discussion around there. But he's not someone I would think I would advocate or try to sell you or anyone else on us taking at 27. But he's a good player. I don't do a Raven-centric board. I just do, my eyes. You do a Raven-centric board, which is fine. But this is a guy that I think is a good player and would be a fantastic pick mid-second round for any team. But I don't know that he'll be there. My guess is he's probably gone by 35, 37, maybe even as high as 38. But other than that, I don't think he's going to be there for – he certainly won't be there for us in the second round.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think he's a second-round pick, though. And I think, you got to look at this. Sometimes we're looking at all these players, and we're looking at the top 10 list. So it includes basically by looking at the whole cross-section of the shows that I do with this type, it includes every player that's going to be drafted in the second round. And you got to look at this. There's a lot of players you like, but it's all just sand flowing through our hands because a lot of it doesn't, will never come to the Ravens just because of circumstance and whatnot. And I'm afraid Trey Amos is in that group. He's number 5 on my list, by the way. I really loved him. Outstanding coverage metrics. 8.3 snaps per target, 4.5 yards per target is fantastic. 2.9 yak per reception is good. Missed tackle rate of 11.5% is above average. OPR of 54.5 is very good. And coverage snaps per penalty of 172 is good. So he's a plus across the board. I'm trying to put together visuals, which will give people a good understanding of this for draft night. So when a cornerback gets drafted, we'll pull up a chart that will show relative to these six metrics how good
that's
these
smart.
Players are. Yeah.
Yeah, it's great.
It'll be fun. His metrics corroborate physical gifts. He had some mixed testing in jumps, but he was a fast guy at 4.43. He was fantastic in SEC play. You mentioned that, and I gave you the thumbs up on that right away. But his most trouble came in that Georgia Southern game, where he allowed 7 of 9 targets to be completed for 50 total yards. Not that getting beat for 9 targets for 50 yards is the end of the world, but he didn't give up a lot of plays, big plays all season. Derwin Burgess Jr., who might be in an NFL camp with Georgia Southern, caught 4 of 5 for 40 yards. And if you're Derwin Burgess Jr., make sure you keep the tape from that from this game, because this might be the highlight of your football career.
He's a good player.
Yeah.
He's a good player. I mean, he touched on it.
Yeah. So included one of the two TDs he allowed all season was in there. I think he finds the ball very well, attacks it at the catch point with good length to do that. Good processor, mirrors well at the top of the stem. He might be the best press corner in this draft. And there's a lot to choose from. And some of the bigger guys I really like, but I think part of being a good press corner is also how you recover from when you lose as being a press corner. And he's really good at that.
He doesn't panic in that moment. Like you said, he's... you having him at 5, me having him at 8, I don't see a difference between that because, when you watch sections of the game, and you see him play, you're like, he's just shutting that dude down over there. And again, there's three or four really bad reps that people have shared on social media of him from 2023 with Alabama. He looks like a different player. Looks like an improved player.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. At Alabama, I always feel like the corners there are looking over their shoulders. They don't get to play until they're juniors. And, you know, we look at what happened to JAD there, for example, in terms of his limited playing time. They come out of school. They have no experience at all. I mean, him going to Ole Miss was a good move. For the Ravens, I'd see him as a rotational outside corner as a rookie. He'd move into a starting role in year two. And he's another guy who could influence the decisions on Awuzie, Humphrey, and Tampa and how they move forward with those guys. Certainly if he's drafted in the second round by the Ravens, and it would take a trade back is what it would take. If he were to do that, then I think he would be a guy who probably starts right away for the Ravens or threatens Awuzie for his job very quickly. I don't think you keep a guy like that on the bench. He plays rotational with Awuzie. I don't think you play him rotationally with Wiggins. I think you play him rotationally with Awuzie.
Yeah, he's one of the guys. There's about six or eight of them in this draft where I've had the thought, and I don't think this is going to happen. But we have done this, I think, two or three times. He's one of those guys that if we did somehow take an outside linebacker or a lineman at 27, mm-hmm. and through some crazy scenario trade back into the first round, I would want someone like Trey Amos, meaning to get that extra year for a player who has I'm not really a huge fan of ceiling and floor stuff, but who has a high floor and a pretty high ceiling, someone who you would like to have that fifth year of control. Maybe that's not a great word when you're talking about people, you know, actual human beings.
That's okay. That's what it is.
Fifth year of contractual, you know, obligation or options. He would be one of those guys for me, even though, like you said, he may be better suited in the, you know, 38, 40 range, someone who I would want to have control of and someone who I know is, from at least watching him play, is reliably going to be on the field. There's no health concerns here.
I'm not going to go down the whole rabbit hole talking about the word control and the use of it, but all I'll say is NFL players, because of the nature of the CBA, make millions and millions of dollars, have CEO suite level benefits, that their package is unbelievably rich in that regard, have, you know, a lifestyle that is wonderful. It comes with contractual elements that are agreed upon by the union that have made the NFL the incredibly popular and successful game it is today. That's end of my soapbox on that. But the control issue and the, oh, you've made me a victim. I'm a prisoner here in year five. You know, screw that.
They live like a king. They live like a king. Yeah, absolutely.
All right. I think we're up to your number seven guy then, because Azaria is my number eight guy.
So Darian Porter, probably one that other people have, you know, a whole lot higher. The film is at times shocking. I mean, you know, you can't watch the film and not make Reek Woolen comparisons. You just can't, with the size, maybe some of the same negatives or deficiencies at times. I mean, Reek Woolen the last 2 years has really drawn a lot of penalties and could have drawn more. His 2023 penalty metrics were really high. They could have been even higher. You know, there was plays where I'm like, why didn't they call a penalty? And Darian Porter's got a little bit of the same traits at times. 6'3", almost 6'4", 4.30, 40. It's ridiculous. You know, 9.99 RAS score. He is 24 years old. I think he turns 25 next January. So he'll go through his whole rookie season at 24 years old. First of all, he runs with vertical routes easily, and you can beat him vertically, or, you know, whatever phrase people want to call it, to get behind a corner, and he'll just catch up to you. I mean, he has that ability. Now, you know, when you do that consistently, you're going to give up big catches at some point. I'm not saying that Porter's going to give up a lot of them, because I don't think he is. You watch games of him and you're like, okay, will someone please throw the ball to his side? Because it didn't happen very often.
Oh yeah.
This is just my notes. I have a draft document that I don't know how you could share it, but I'll give you a link and you can welcome to, if you want. People can check it out if they want. So really great. I think he's better in zone than people want to give him credit for. And I've seen two people say he's a zone corner, and I've seen three or four people say he's a man corner. I think he can play a little bit of both. I don't think he's subpar at either one. And look, he's got great special teams ability. 5 blocked kicks.
Unbelievable.
Changed the game against, I think it might have been Iowa in 2023 with a block kick. I might be wrong there. Absolutely dominated Iowa this year. Had 2 picks in that game. If you're in the NFL front office and you passed on Reek Woolen, which everybody did, including the Seahawks, there's no way that right now those teams aren't looking at Darian Porter, maybe even Frazier or others, and saying, hey, we don't want to pass on the next Reek Woolen. I think that he would be a great pick in round 2 if he's available, but I don't think he will be there.
I would absolutely love to get him in round 2 as well. My number 6 guy, so he's your number 7, my number 6. And some of the things you just said are outstanding comments, because I think they hit right at the heart of it. Is he casts an enormous shadow. No, the quarterbacks never throw his way. Now, one of the things about Porter was Iowa State kept him off the field a lot. And I've been in communication with some Iowa State fans to try and understand why that was over the last couple of days. And none of them can give me a good answer, because they had a lot of cornerbacks, and none of them were as good as Tariq Woolen, as Darian Porter. But they still kept him off the field. But he has a really big tackling problem, a career 19.6% missed tackle rate. I can live with that when you only are targeted once every almost 12 coverage snaps, one every 11.9. He was the best in the class. Yards per target were only 4.1. Yak per reception was 4.4. His opposition passer rating for the whole season, 4.7 throwing his way. 4.7. That's the 0 to 158 scale, folks. So it is the lowest in this class. Last year, I moved a guy into my top 10 because he had a 7 passer rating, which was the lowest in the entire country. Played in the SEC. Haddon of Tennessee.
I don't know if you remember. Yeah, I remember. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I remember you talking about him. Yeah, you were the first person to talk about him. Nobody else did.
So I don't think he did anything as a rookie, by the way. I didn't actually check to see if he'd done anything as a rookie. But Porter is the best in the last 2 years in terms of quarterback rating against. He didn't have any flags the whole year for a guy, you know, a big guy who could potentially get grabby off the line of scrimmage when asked to play press. Now, you mentioned the he'll catch up with you. I think he does a great job catching up when he plays off coverage. And I think he's in a good shape when he's playing zone coverage on the back end. I think he's very good. The one weakness I would point to is that I don't think he transitions as well from pressing into trail. And he's very good at everything pretty much. But if there was one area that I'd pick, that would be the one. He's a former wide receiver. That time was not wasted. He tracks the ball very well in the air. What else did I have about this? Squeezes receivers to the sidelines. Love to see that. He's a physical guy who didn't give up space towards the middle of the field again. Here's a big one. Despite playing 6 years at Iowa State, 3 as a wide receiver, 3 as a corner, he's only played 397 college coverage snaps, which is absurdly little. And even this last year, I cut off the limit at 300 coverage snaps to look at people for like median and things like that. And not for, I mean, his individual stats, they are what they are relative to those medians and percentile ranks and whatnot. But Porter wasn't on the field very much. And I think it was his tackling. Yep. They didn't really want him in there for run defensive downs, and they wanted a different corner in there. So age is a concern, but Reed was a rookie at 24. So I think having Porter as a rookie at 25, they can probably live with. His college experience is a concern, but the gifts are amazing. Even if he's just a one contract player, which I don't really see. I mean, he's such a gifted athlete. I don't really see a reason why that needs to be true. I see him as a tremendous value pick at 59. And I think I would take him over the other guy we were talking about who had similar. Was it Thomas, who was the 6'2" shadow over the field guy? Yeah.
Yeah. Either one can't go wrong. 2 things, you know, it's crazy that when you meant, I didn't know the missed tackle rate. And for people who are listening, like Ken and I don't, we do message somewhat leading up to the show, but I don't share my evaluation. Actually, I did. I do think I sent you the document. I certainly don't expect you to look at it, but I have no idea about these metrics. So when you said the missed tackle rate, you know, I was like, well, the Reek Woolen comparison, like that's, you know, let's just hammer that nail down further because it's the same damn thing. it's the same situation. This is a unique talent, and he may not work. He may not be an all-pro player. He may not be a long-term NFL starter. I find it hard to believe that there's that much talent, physical gifts, ball skills. So I find it hard to believe that he won't succeed. Another thing to mention, and this is from Jake Hallett in my Ravens Discord, state record holder for the 400 meters in Iowa. So, I mean, the long speed is there. There's a couple corners. Denzel Burke is one. I forget who the other guy is that I don't really love in terms of, I think you called it transitioning. I often call it going from second gear to fourth. And mm-hmm. what we meant by that was you got to be able to skip third gear, dude. You got to be able to turn and go now. And you see that lost connection to the receiver in that turning. Darian Porter, that ain't him. He's got long speed and he's got the ability to turn and get out of there quickly. Skip third gear, if you will. It's a fantastic talent. Like I said, if he was there at 59, let's do it.
I'm with you on that. I want to throw in one more stat I have for him here. Opposing quarterbacks threw the ball to his assignment 17 times all year. 5 completions. They completed 29.4% of the passes, and he had 3 interceptions against 5 completions the entire year of his assignment.
Yeah, shut down.
Yeah. All right. Let's move on here. We're running late as we always do, but that's our love of football showing through. Who is your number? Was it your number 7 guy? Was Porter, right?
Yeah, I had Porter 7, so it should be you.
Okay, so I have Siobhan Revel of East Carolina at number 7, and I really struggled with where to put him. I think, honestly, if I really did it again, I might put him a little lower because he does have a big injury flag. Huge, lean boundary cornerback, great 2023 season, minimal total college experience, and it's at East Carolina, so it'd be a double jump involved, and a big injury flag again. He had 2 JUCO seasons at a place called Lewisburg before transferring to ECU for 3 more seasons, and he's 23 in April, so he's not a young guy. Torn ACL prior to week 4 in 2024. He's been talking about decelerating and cutting, but he's not going to be ready to do that until August. So that's an enormous risk for his 2024 play and development. Might not play at all, and might lose the year entirely from a development perspective. And that doesn't mean he can't be in the room with the cornerbacks. Doesn't mean he can't, be in the weight room, obviously getting better. But what I always find is when a player's not able to really do on-field activities and it's all focused on the rehab, they fall behind in all elements of play. You know, you need you really want is to build muscle memory on the field for what you're actually trying to do. That's the most valuable thing you do. Second most valuable might be in the classroom. And I even find that, you know, it's hard to stay up with that if you're not also practicing that stuff on the field. So I'm a little down on that. When in 23, he was good, but he wasn't absolutely over the top great. He did have 5.2% missed tackle rate. He did have a 62 opposition passer rating in 23. 6.0 yards per target, though, is fairly average. And here's the bad stat. He had 1 penalty every 55 coverage snaps, which is way too much. So, he's certainly got a lot of things that are good. He plays to the whistle. He returned a touchdown versus Appalachian State, where it looked like pretty much about 19 other players on the field thought the whistle had been blown. And he just, all of a sudden, he's running with it. The referee's running with him. So, you know the official is. So he knew it was. 2 field goals blocked in 23. You mentioned that for Porter as well. What, 4 blocked punts in over a 2-year period. The only other guy I know who ever did that is Ed Reed in 2002 mm-hmm. and 2003. So that's pretty fantastic. But 2 blocked field goals anyway. I didn't actually check to see these, but I assume he would have been blocking a field goal coming off the edge, which means he has a great snap get off do that. And so that's impressive. For the Ravens, you know, injuries held him back in high school. He had some sort of a serious head injury, a fractured skull and a broken collarbone, both in high school before this problem showed up. He just got injured again at the very wrong time, which is sad as hell. I think round 1 is out of the question for him. I think his name is likely to fall late in round 2 or into round 3 with the combined concerns of age, double jump, and injury as a trifecta. So sad situation, but I don't see him anyway for the Ravens in round 1, where a lot of people have actually mocked him to the Ravens. And I don't I think if there's any other of the top huge corners, hulking corners available, I think the Ravens would go for one of them in round two ahead of Rebel.
Yeah, we can't really get an accurate eval. I mean, the reality is, like, you know, we can go off the film in 2023 and what little bit he played this year in 2024. He got injured in a practice situation, apparently, which sucks. Mm-hmm. Physically imposing, number one. The Michigan game from 2023, like, his level of physicality was noticeable. And look, obviously that Michigan team, you know, won the national championship, and they that's a Jim Harbaugh team. They ran the football and they were running the football to the boundary lot, and that's where he was, and he was there. Like, he's an ass kicker. I mean, he is an ass kicker. Again, I'm going off of the pre-injury film. Couple of things that I note. I was not as impressed initially with the film as others, but the more that I did watch, the more that I did like. Again, going off of pre-injury evaluation, like we just talked about with Porter being able to go from second to fourth gear, our comparison, or one of the things we would say is, you know, you get the elite athlete who can go from second to fifth. And he showed me some of that. Now, I'm not saying that he's faster than Darian Porter, because his time in the 40 was, you know, like, I think his projected time, I think, was like a 4.42 or 4.41. But did see some of that from him. His ability to close on routes from basically deep crossing routes, not a dig route, but routes that emanate from one side of the field and cross to the other. He's very similar to Woolen in that he'll kind of hang out on the backside intentionally. I want you to throw this ball because I'm going to go from second to fourth, fifth gear, or third to fifth gear.
Baiting the quarterback.
Baiting you to throw it. Yeah, on those particular types of routes. I'm not saying that he baits quarterbacks all the time, because I'll be honest with you, I've seen three reps of him as a cover two corner, and I think there's some rough edges there. Quarterback looking one direction and him being moved, and then the ball coming back, and I'm like, hey man, you're the closest guy to the line of scrimmage in what I would call a cover two, Tampa two, cover two, whatever. You can't let another receiver be outside of you in the flats, and that's, you are the outside guy. And, you know, there's landmarks that people use, and people that are way smarter than me would talk landmarks. But point is, he can't be moved that far when the quarterback hasn't moved outside of the pocket. So I think there's some rough edges there, maybe that don't exist with some of the guys who played in higher level programs. I'm not going to run down East Carolina. In fact, I think the East Carolina defensive dudes played hard in some of the film that I saw against good teams, particularly me. I mean, they're flying. They got beat, obviously, by Michigan, but they were playing hard, and I was impressed by him. He's physically imposing, great start-stop ability, tremendous confidence, and almost bordering on too much so at times, where I saw him kind of, I don't want to say bait, but hang out on top of something a little too soon and start to break. Maybe a little sooner than I would have expected. So maybe he's got more advanced knowledge and awareness than I'm giving him credit for. I think he's a really great talent. I think he overreacts in certain zone situations. Oh, he's the guy that I think either just turned 23, or it's like the 12th, something like that. I think he's 22, getting ready to turn 23. So it's not like
he's 23 in April.
Yeah. So he's not. I knew there was one of them. Great talent. I think he'll be gone before 59, even with the injury concerns. Maybe the injuries, you know, push him a little further down the board than I think. But the film looked good. I only had access to three games, I think. So, you know, NFL front offices are obviously going to have watched every single snap.
So with Morrison and with the other guy who has a April 14th, I don't know if we come to him yet, as an April 14th date for a private workout, we're going to have more information. We know everything we're going to know about Revel right now.
Right.
There isn't more information on its way. So I can't, you know, I would think the highest the Ravens would take a risk on him is the second round. If he's available at 59, and it was Porter was out there, or some of these other guys were out there who I think are, almost as good, I still probably would go with the players right now.
If you had a choice at 59 between those two, and we obviously haven't gone corner around one, then you take Porter. No, I absolutely agree. If it's Porter, Thomas, and Revel, you take Porter. I know you said earlier, you know, you may take Thomas. That would be a great situation. We should root for that, right? Yeah. We should root for that. I think he's a tremendous talent, and it sucks, like you said, the timing of the injury. I think he plays the game really hard, and from what I saw on the field, he looks like the type of guy that, as a coach, you want on your – it's almost like a linebacker mentality in a guy who's playing outside corner. He's very physical with receivers. I do really like him. I do really like him. I wish we had more film to evaluate from 2024.
Okay, so where was Revel on your list?
Fourth.
Okay, so you liked him too. Okay, so unfortunate situation. So that'll have to do it for the first part of the show. We're going to come back and we're going to do number six to number one when we come back. But Coach, tell folks about all the All-22 channel and what you got working right now.
All-22 films on YouTube. I do have a Patreon and a Discord that I spend a lot of time, quote, in, meaning tracking conversations, participating in conversations. The last 3 to 4 weeks been a real labor of love trying to get as many evaluations done as possible. You know, there's no real revenue generator from that, you know, to be upfront. It's just, I don't know what it's called. And maybe you've got a good phrase for it. It's just, it's a heck of a lot of fun to try to watch players and maybe emulate some of the evaluation process that the Ravens and other teams do. I enjoy it. This year, it's been more enjoyable because I dedicated myself to it. And unfortunately, in some degree, it's meant the exclusion of me getting videos out on my YouTube channel because I've been, you know, doing so much of this. And I've got a significant amount of players' film broken down. And I try to make that available to people in my Patreon or Discord or whatever so that they can see that the work is being done. And I'm not just talking about the work being done. If you, you know, go check out the link that maybe Ken will be able to share. You'll be able to see it for yourself, and maybe you agree or disagree with it, but you can't contest or disagree with the fact that the work has in fact been done.
Yeah, great stuff. And by the way, I saw the slides you did. I thought they're very good, very well done. They're terse. They get right to the point about, you know, qualities you like and don't, and they have you know, important information that you want to know about every cornerback as well. And I thought it was just very well done. And in general, I always appreciate having you on the show because you bring one of the highest levels of football understanding, and it's a little bit different, I think, complementary to the way I look at football, which I really appreciate about you. I hope we have an opportunity at some point during the draft to get together and on the watch party and do some things. I know you're going to be fairly busy as well, but hopefully there's an hour or two we can spend together during the draft and you know, reflect on some of the things that have happened during that time. And while I'm talking about that, let me ask everybody else out there, please join us for the draft, doing this at least once every position group. But we do 17 straight hours, roughly, with the length of the entire draft. This year, the Ravens have 8 picks on day 3, so that's going to be a ton of fun. If you weren't part of the process last year, we use a new spreadsheet method that I think is a kind of a collaborative spreadsheet method that we really are enjoying doing, color coding picks as they go through. If they go to the Steelers or the Bengals or the Browns or the Ravens, they get a different color. If they've been picked in whatever round, they get a different color. If and then most importantly, for the players that remain on a deep group of position lists, we can make selections about who might be coming next round, including a lot of suggestions from the stream that are a lot of fun. Anyway, would hope people would join for that. Coach, hope you'll be able to too. Thanks for joining me here.
Yeah, man. Likewise. Appreciate it, man. It's a lot of fun. Looking forward to part two.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.